From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made on Thursday night at 10 p.m. on WXXI-TV, and we all hope that you will be watching that hour. It's a film, and the film is called Generation A, Portraits of Autism and the Arts. And it explores the question of what happens to the brain when arts get involved, when arts can impact someone with autism. 8 compelling portraits. I've had a chance to see the film. It is really touching, a very moving film. Kids with backgrounds that are diverse. I mean, that's sort of that old stereotype about autism. You met one person with autism, And you really see that in the film on Thursday night. You meet these kids. They have so many different gifts and abilities and passions. And art starts to impact them in different ways. Sometimes it's music and dance. Sometimes it's performing music, singing. There's a moment where I don't want to give too much away, but somebody gets on stage and it just brings the house down when you realize the breakthroughs that can happen. Film, the creation of film, writing. How about book writing? I mean, the way the arts can impact us is amazing, and especially for people with autism. So that's Generation A, Portraits of Autism and the Arts. It's Thursday night at 10 p.m. on WXXI-TV, and our conversation this hour has that as kind of a platform. This is all part of the Dialogue on Disability, and this program is presented as part of Dialogue on Disability Week. It's a partnership between WXXI and the Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series, and Dialogue on Disability is supported in part by the Golisano Foundation, with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. Let me welcome our guests for the hour. Katie McGowan is here, Autism Coordinator at CP Rochester and Happiness House. Katie, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Also here is Betsy King, Professor of Music Therapy at Nazareth College. Betsy, welcome to you.
Thank you.
Lisa Peck is here. She's a recreational therapist through the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities, and the mom of the young man we're about to meet as well. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, thank you.
Also here is Jeremiah Ihoma, author, 12 years old, and we're going to be talking about My Super Life with Autism, written and illustrated by Jeremiah. Hi, great to have you here, Jeremiah.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good.
Well, it's great to have you. Congratulations on the book, by the way. It's really cool stuff, so congratulations on that.
Thank you.
You guys had a chance to see the film? Yes? No? Yes?
Yes.
All right, that's great, because I'm excited for everyone to get a chance to see it. And what I want to do is I just want to listen to a brief clip from the film from a young girl named Abby. The film starts with Abby. And I was gripped right away with just how introspective she is about her autism and the frustration that she can feel. Let's listen to some of what Abby had to say.
I want you to just tell me what you would just tell me. We were working on our spelling words, and what was happening in your head?
That my brain wouldn't wake up!
Is that what it feels
stupid
like?
Stupid brain! Why does it not listen to me?
Right, so you're trying to make your brain work.
But it can't! Stupid brain!
What do you think we can do to help you?
I want to rip it out and give it to someone else, not have a typical kid's brain and put it in my head! I want to be like that!
Okay, I understand. You feel frustrated, huh?
Yeah! Can't believe God made me as a littler kid!
Oh, man. She's 13 years old, and she's really struggling with autism. And she understands it enough to feel like God made her differently and made her lesser, which is a horrible thing to feel. Her story is one that I hope gives you some hope when you see the film. But boy, Katie McGowan, that hit me really hard seeing it. What do you think?
It was really hard to listen to. And her story, I don't think, is unique necessarily. And so, you know, the knowledge that so many people are struggling with this is really, you know, it touches your heart because you want to provide as much support and help as you can. And honestly, watching the film and watching, you know, her story develop was really something very powerful. And I felt like it was such a key part of this documentary.
I couldn't agree more there. Betsy, what did you think? What do you make of what you just heard?
Well, I thought it was so important to show, you know, I feel like sometimes when we see portraits of people with autism, they're presented sometimes as feel-good stories. Let me show you the miracle first. And so I thought it was so important that it opened up with somebody being honest about, and brutally honest, about what a struggle it can be. And we have to remember that there are so many children with autism who can't tell us. They don't have the communication skills or the communication devices to tell us what they're feeling. So we really depend on somebody like Abby to get us connected. And I thought it was perfect to put first because you were drawn in immediately.
It's tough. And Lisa, I wonder how it hit you. How do you feel about what you heard?
Watching that video, seeing her struggle like that, really hit close to home. Jeremiah is getting to the point where he's at that age where he's starting to realize that there's something different. And sometimes he really struggles with that. But you know, it was good to see her, you know, as the film progressed or whatever, it was good to see her feel like the rest of the kids. You know, she was a part of a group. She was a part of the dance group or whatever. And, you know, that she felt better about herself. So that was really good to see. But, yes, it definitely hit home.
She ends up being, and again, I don't want to give too much away. I really want you to see the film on Thursday. And her Abby story is one of eight that's just, you know, each unique, each really moving in its own way. She does a tremendous job. I mean, she really moves well, and she looks just like she's enjoying it so much. And that does give you some hope. But boy, Betsy, what a remarkable point that you make there, that if we just show you the miracle, that it actually kind of dehumanizes a little bit.
Absolutely. I mean, she spoke, I think, for a lot of people who couldn't speak. And even this film shows people who are finding the success and kind of having, and this happens a lot, having an immediate response to the introduction of the art medium, you know, the movement or the music. We work all the time with children and adults who move much more slowly through that experience. It's clear that there's this connection, in our case, to the music. But we work very slowly over a period of years in developing relationships and communications. It, to us, it's no less a miracle. But it doesn't happen quite as quickly. But I did think that this film really helped you see the struggle as well as the miracle.
As the hour goes on, I'd like to explore more just that process that you see. And again, you can't characterize it for all people, all kids with autism. Every case
is
different.
That's what you said.
But I do want to hear about some of the progress that you see there, because the film just demonstrated the power of art in so many different mediums. So let me talk to Lisa and Jeremiah just a little bit here. And Lisa, tell me a little bit of Jeremiah's story first, because I do want to talk about the book and the way you view art and the connection with autism. But tell me a little bit about Jeremiah first.
Jeremiah is 12. He'll be 13 in a couple weeks. And ever since he was about 1 to 2, I had a feeling that there was just something a little bit different that was going on. And it took many years to finally get an autism diagnosis. For many years, he had a diagnosis of sensory integration dysfunction, autistic tendencies, and selective mutism. I think he was like 8 or 9 by the time I finally had him diagnosed. Each time I went to the doctors, they were afraid to give him a diagnosis because he was making progress, and they didn't want to put the label on him if it didn't need to be. And by the time 8 or 9, there was still some red flags. So the doctor was like, yeah, you know. But I mean, the whole time I've been a huge advocate for him. So no matter if he was labeled with the autism diagnosis or not, he was getting the proper supports that he needed. He started getting services when he was 3.
Okay.
From Happiness House.
Jeremiah, let me just ask you what you think about, you know, what autism is. What is autism, and you know, how do you feel about the term, understanding what autism is?
I just think it's a way people view it. I might see the world different than others, and autistic can affect the way I think and learn and how I process things. But I just think it's really not that different from a person without autism. Maybe just your senses are a bit more sensitive, and I don't think that's a bad thing.
My goodness, no.
Amen.
That's actually a beautiful way to look at it.
Good job, Jeremiah.
And so, Jeremiah, when you think about your senses being more sensitive, does that mean... I guess, can I ask you, can you tell me a little bit more about what that means for you to be a little bit more sensitive in certain ways?
When people say that they have autism, I don't think they should be treated like an alien, because it's not. They're very similar to you, and it's not that different. And it's basically how you choose it. If you want it to be different, then it can be different. Or you can take that and use it to your advantage. I mean, it's not a bad thing to have good. I have better senses than most people, mm-hmm. Because my senses are more sensitive. Yeah, so I didn't take that as a downgrade or anything. Mm-hmm. I took most of what I can take out of it, and so far, I'm doing better than most people without autism.
Jeremiah, what are some senses that? What are your senses that are more sensitive? And
I used to have my hearing, especially in loud places. I could hear everything at once, and it really bothered my ears. Like everything you heard, it just all came at once. But when things get quiet, I can hear like a whisper, because it might come in. Just because everything comes in at once, I can hear really good when it's quiet. But it hurts my ears in loud. It used to hurt my ears in loud places when I was young.
And what do you do about that?
When I was young, I had got headphones. I used headphones a lot, or I just used to try to avoid loud places. And over time, it just got better and better. And now I can go to concerts with my grandma.
And here I am holding a book now. So, Lisa, can you tell me, first of all, has he always shown an interest in any sort of writing or art? How did a book end up on the radar there?
Jeremiah has always been very gifted within the arts. He likes to draw. He has quite the imagination. When he was younger, the boy, he would devastate him if you told him that he was not a superhero, because he truly believed that he was a superhero. His favorite was Buzz Lightyear. And so, anyways, that's where you get my super life with autism. And I will let him tell you how he chose to write a book.
So there was these kids. My mom was friends with their parents, and
Jeremiah and Joshua West from Champions of Change.
Okay.
They just seemed like kids when you first looked at them, but then they told me they wrote a book. And I was a bit puzzled there, because I thought kids couldn't do much. And they showed me, and I was stunned. I didn't know that kids could actually do something as big as writing a book. So I said, why not? Because it shouldn't be that hard. So it was hard. certainly was hard. I definitely took it. I underestimated it, but I stuck to it, and it was a very slow process. It felt very slow. I always thought, when am I gonna finish it? Am I ever gonna finish this thing? And finally, everything came out smooth after finally revising everything. And finally, when I got the book in my hands, it felt like gold.
Jeremiah, what you just said, first of all, about how feeling like, is this ever going to get done? And then it feeling like gold when it gets in your head. You now know what every author has mm-hmm. ever felt like. Mm-hmm. And you also know what many people who didn't finish the process to become authors have felt like. It's great. The book's beautiful. It's called My Super Life with Autism, written and illustrated by Jeremiah. Illustrated as well?
Yes, and I hope you'll have a chance to put some, at least one or two of the illustrations up on the website, because the minute I saw them, I had to have the book.
Okay, well, we definitely can do that. I kind of want to read it. I mean, I think we can get through a lot of it. I mean, Lisa, how do you feel about that?
That's fine.
Is that all right? Yeah. You want right with me reading this? You want me to read it, or is that okay?
That's fine.
Okay, is that all right with you, Jeremiah?
Yep. I just want to say one quick little thing.
Of course.
I think that the process of it and how long it took, that was the most challenging for Jeremiah, because every day he'd say, is it done yet? Is it done yet? But the rest of the process, as far as writing it, he sat down with those two boys. They sat at the table. It was like a little business meeting. And they started out from a web. You know, when your teachers teach you how to build on a story with webs and different ideas. And then he wrote it. And then we had a friend of mine help him edit it. And then he worked with an art therapist from Hochstein School of Music and did his illustrations. And, you know, he was a pro at everything. The thing that he needed the most help with was telling him that, you know, it will be done. I promise. We're not giving up on it. It just felt like a long, long process. It was about a year. But really, the work that he put into it, he did a phenomenal job.
And I will say, I'm about to read it, but it doesn't do it justice without the illustration.
Exactly.
So are people going to be able to get this,
yes.
Lisa? Yes. And where can they get it?
You can buy the book at his website, and it's www.ihomabooks.com. So www.ihomabooks.com.
ihomabooks.com. Megan Mack and I will link to that not only on the Connections page, but also we'll throw it up there on our Twitter accounts as well. So this is My Super Life with Autism. Hi, my name is Jeremiah, and I have Asperger's, which is a form of autism. This book is to help you understand some of the superpowers I have, as well as some of the struggles I face in dealing with autism. The illustrations are so good. One of the superpowers I have is that I have a very good memory. I remember things from a long time ago. I clearly remember a trip I took to Disney when I was just 6 years old. I remember we went to a dinner show called the Hoop-Dee-Doo Review. I remember them singing and dancing a lot, and they even got the audience to participate. Another thing I am really good at is music, rhythm, and dance. I play the saxophone in my school band. I belong to a club called Music and Arts through a local school of music. In the club, we sing, dance, and play musical instruments. We even occasionally paint and work on the computer. Like with everyone else, I have my strengths and weaknesses. One thing I struggle with is when I get wound up, it is hard for me to calm down by myself. It is hard for me to have control of myself when I am wound up or angry. Some things that help me are my weighted blankets, taking deep breaths, a warm shower, my mom's massages to my shoulders, arms, hands, and feet, or going to a quiet place by myself. When I am upset, it is difficult for me to use my words. It's like my mind breaks down and I can't get my words out. And here's another point where you really should see the illustrations. Sometimes I will growl. My mom doesn't like it when I do that and tells me to use the words God gave me. Having autism sometimes makes me feel nervous. In new situations, sometimes I try to hold it together, but it can only last so long before I have a meltdown. I also like my daily routine to be predictable, and if something changes, I like to know ahead of time. If there's changes to my routine, in my routine without any notice, it causes me to be under a lot of stress. When I was younger, I did not like to play with other kids, but with a lot of therapy, I enjoy hanging out with my friends. I still get nervous in certain social situations, such as a busy or loud environment or big groups of people. My mom tells me that when I used to go to daycare as a tot, I would stand in the corner and scream, cry, and I would not play with the other kids. So having autism is not a bad thing. It actually makes my senses a lot more sensitive. I can feel and hear things better than people without autism. I'm a very smart boy with a pretty high IQ. It just means my mind works differently than others. There are many famous people who are living or have lived with autism. Some of the people I am talking about are Albert Einstein and Steve Jobs. These are people who are known to be very smart and have done things that have changed the world. And he's got a picture of him when he grows up. You can make a big difference too and help the world be a better place I hope I can too. The end. That's my super life with autism. If you have someone in your life with autism, which is pretty much anybody hearing me, mm-hmm. I think you should get this book. It's beautiful. I think it's illustrated wonderfully. Ehoma Books, and Ehoma is Ihoma, ehomabooks.com. Get it there. Jeremiah, that is beautiful. I mean, I really mean that. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah, you deserve that. That's very honest. It's very open. You must be very proud, Lisa. How do you feel?
Yes. The Jeremiah that he was when he was younger is not the Jeremiah who he was today, and he has overcome so much. There's been a lot of factors in his growth, and that's because I really do believe that the early intervention helped. Me being in the field, working in the field for so many years, that continued in the home setting too. I offered him structure and, a lot of the sensory stuff, I desensitized him to. A lot of people with autism are very picky as far as their foods. He's always been under the understanding that he eats what I cook. It might take him a little bit more time, but he eats what I cook. And to this day, he still eats what I cook, but he's eating, the meals that we're eating and not, specific couple things. And I've always taken him to the circuses and the Disney on Ice. You know, when he was little, we had to leave early, but I always had a second adult with me. I always planned ahead. I had a second adult so that the other kids did not have to leave. We've done things like Disney. And, the first time we took him to Disney, I was scared because I didn't know what to expect, and we're spending a lot of money. But you know what? I brought his video games, and when he was overstimulated and I needed him to calm himself down, he would go into his DS, and that was the only thing that existed, was his DS. So, together we have found ways to get around these hurdles that he's had in life, and really he has come a long, long way. So, did I ever think I was going to have a son that was an author? Absolutely not, but you know what?
Well, and Jeremiah?
He's my superhero.
What is the best thing your mom makes for dinner?
Pizza.
Is that a surprise to you, Mom?
Yeah, because I don't usually cook pizza.
We order. You usually order pizza? That's what we call sort of a backhanded compliment there. Jeremiah, she says you eat what she cooks. What's the disappointment? What does she make? Pretend she's not here. You can be totally honest now.
Meatloaf.
Meatloaf.
Yes, he does not like meatloaf. That's still one thing that he struggles with is the ground beef.
But you know what, Jeremiah? There's still things that I struggle with too. So you and I are there. There's one part of the book that really stood out to me that I'd love to ask Jeremiah and the rest of our panel about. He writes, another thing I'm really good at is music, rhythm, and dance, and I play the saxophone in my school band. When did you know you loved music?
I started getting interested in music around six, basically, when I could understand what they were saying, and the beat to it. I loved how it kind of they made it go with the beat. So that really was the one person who. That really was the thing that got me interested in music.
Do you remember how old you were?
Six.
6 years old, yeah. Lisa, what did you see as the impact on music on him?
Well, I know for a fact that he was interested in music a lot earlier than six because when he was little, I used to have to rock him every night to go to sleep at night. And on certain days of the week when American Idol would come on, he would decide that he did not want to sleep. And he would, as an infant, would be very, very, he would be addicted to that, watching that show. He would not go to sleep. And he loved, the singing. And even, what would spark his interest was even the beginning of the American Idol show, the music that they play. So, mm-hmm. Yes. What was your question?
Well, when did it really start to impact him? What do you think the actual impact was?
I think that music lets him, if there's music on, he likes to dance. And I sometimes think that helps him get some of his sensory input in, the movement. But he's always really liked music. He's always sang and dance, and he actually has really good rhythm. And then when we when I got him into the music and arts program through Hochstein, he really flourished, and he was like their poster child for advertising. He did a really good job with the dance and the singing and stuff and on stage.
Betsy, how much does this story sort of reflect what you experience as a professor of music therapy at Nazareth College?
Oh, a lot. You know, there are so many ways that, and I'll just talk about music, but this applies to all of the arts. There are so many ways that children with autism can get involved with music. And a lot of times it isn't something as formal as music therapy. A lot of times it really goes from responding to the American Idol theme song and just spontaneously connecting with the music to adapting a normal music, you know, what a typical neurotypical person would experience with music, like playing the saxophone, and adapting that activity so that a person with autism can participate. And then another layer would be, if none of that is working, and if the person really needs additional assistance and a real focus on their individual needs, then a music therapist can get involved. So there are a lot of levels to how it can work. But the thing about music is that the rhythm, I'm so glad Jeremiah mentioned the rhythm, because that provides something that centers you. The beat helps, gives you something to focus on. Another wonderful thing about music is that once you know a song, when it's presented to you again, it sounds like it did before, which is not something that you get if you have autism in the world. Everything changes day to day, moment to moment. There's not enough consistency, and the music can be consistent.
One of our listeners off air, Tim, just wanted to know if the book that we just read, My Super Life with Autism, he just want to know if it has an impact on the panelists. What do you think, Betsy?
Well, I just now saw it right before this program, and I immediately we decided to do business down in the parking garage because I have to have several copies immediately. For me, the thing that hit me was the color and vividness of what you can't see is that a lot of the art is clay sculpture, and it is so expressive and so colorful. I was drawn to it immediately, and then what you read, of course, is wonderful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. What do you think?
Well, one of the things is, you know, the artwork, you can see that it was a process and that it would be quite an undertaking to create these beautiful claymation pieces to accompany the illustrations. Also, the perspective. I mean, really, again, we're talking about glimpsing inside and thinking about individuals with autism who can't communicate those things. And so Jeremiah's voice is just so well heard within this book, and it's such a wonderful thing to have.
Well, let me grab a phone call. Sam in Rochester has a question about a story he saw in the news recently and just wants to ask our panelists what they think. Go ahead, Sam.
Hello.
Go ahead, Sam.
Yes, I just wanted to, I heard you reading the story there from the book that the young man wrote, him and his other friend, and then I heard him talking about, the young child talking about, you know, some of the things that were affecting him when he was younger. And I just wanted to ask them what they thought the setback would be for the young man who was attacked by the gentleman from Syracuse, and how far they thought that would set him back, because he had made considerable progress in his life, you know, working with his family, working with others that was, you know, had autism. You know, and what do they think the effect of that would be, and how long it's going to take him to recuperate from that? And do they think that, you know, the sentence the guy got was just?
Thank you, Sam. You know, that's a subject, I took the call because a lot of people have asked us to do an entirely separate program on that, which we have not yet. So I'll just ask, you know, Katie, you've seen the story, and a lot of people felt very emotional about it. What did you think?
It definitely triggers an emotional response. I mean, it was a horrible thing that happened. However, you know, moving forward is really the option. And so creating supports to help him get back where he was. You know, a lot of the public support that's come up has been wonderful. So, you know, all we can do is continue to support him. And every individual is different, so we can't speak to time frame and those kind of things. But I think what needs to happen is already happening. The community rising up to support him, and really his family working with him to help him get back to what he loves.
Betsy was giving big thumbs up. She's saying what she said.
I'm exactly saying what she said. You know, it is, trauma is difficult for anyone, and anyone who experiences an attack or a trauma like that is going to need recovery time. And I think it's important to remember that although his specific needs may be unique, that would be true of anybody. And that's one of the ways in which a person with autism is no different than the rest of us.
Okay. Lisa, did you follow that story at all? What did you think?
Yes, I did a little bit. I think that, you know, as far as the support, he's getting the support from the community and his team and actually the local police, you know, the local police or the Rochester City Police. But the most important thing is that when a child on the spectrum finds a niche that they really enjoy, it's really, really important to not do nothing but encourage them to continue with that, because you know, in that niche they might have made friends, so they might have they're going to have a sense of belonging. So it's really important that that, you know, that the community continues to rally him, but most importantly his teammates on the team,
yeah,
that they continue to offer him the support, because that's so important to him, is having a feeling of belonging to something.
Now, Chase Coleman found that connection through cross country, through running. I don't think his teammates who valued him cared what his times were or if he was finishing occasionally behind the pack. It was a question of connection, and hopefully they do have a chance to reestablish that. And speaking of connection, that's what we're talking about this hour. We're talking about connecting people with autism through the arts and the impact of arts on people with autism, on the brains of people with autism, on the way it can unlock all kinds of things. And we invite you to watch on Thursday night at 10 p.m. on WXXI-TV, a film called Generation A, Portraits of Autism and the Arts. You heard a little clip earlier this hour, 8 individual stories woven into that hour of people with autism, young people with autism, and they and their caregivers, their friends, family, speaking about the challenges they face every day, as well as their hopes. And you're going to see some moments in this film that it's really strong, really powerful. Sometimes we watch programming like this when there's somebody in our immediate life with, if it's about autism, then we'll watch it. Or if someone in our life has cancer and there's a film about cancer, then we watch it. This is one of those films where I would just say, no matter whether you know someone directly, immediately with autism or not, and you probably do, but even if you don't, Thursday night, 10 p.m., Generation A, Portraits of Autism and the Arts. Really, really strong stuff. Our guests this hour are Katie McGowan, Autism Coordinator at CP Rochester and Happiness House, and Betsy King is a professor of music therapy at Nazareth College. Lisa Peck is a recreational therapist through the Office for People with Developmental Disabilities, and she's the mom of Jeremiah. And Jeremiah Ihoma is a young author, about to turn 13 years old. He's got his first book out, and he's telling us about My Super Life with Autism. This program is presented as a part of Dialogue on Disability Week. It's a partnership between WXXI and Al Siegel Community of Agencies in conjunction with the Herman and Margaret Schwartz Community Series. Dialogue on Disability is supported in part by the Golisano Foundation, with additional support from the Fred L. Emerson Foundation. When we come back, I want to ask Katie McGowan to tell us a little bit more about what CP Rochester and Happiness House are doing these days. I want to know what Betsy King's work entails when it comes to music therapy, and the kinds of questions that you may have. If you're a parent and you get a diagnosis, you know, Lisa was telling us that Jeremiah was 8 or 9 when you got the diagnosis, is that right? So it happens at different stages, different ages, but you may have questions. You may have questions about how music may come into play. Do you immediately go to music? Do you look for music to turn certain things on, or how does that work? We'll talk about all of that after this only break of the hour here on Connections. And I want to tell you what's coming up tomorrow on the program. In our first hour, we're talking about privacy and security, and especially online. A lot of conversations about cybersecurity, from hacking to the privacy and your own records, and that intersection is the focus of our first hour tomorrow. In our second hour, the dialogue on disability continues. We'll focus on muscular dystrophy and the challenges faced by kids living with that condition and other diagnoses, especially as they reach young adulthood and set life goals. Welcome back to Connections, and I should read this, shouldn't I, Megan Mack? I've got a note here that I want you to be aware of. The Rochester City Ballet is presenting a sensory-friendly ballet on February 4th at 11 a.m. at the Nazareth Arts Center. It's Green Eggs and Ham, and they're going to provide special modifications to ensure children on the autism spectrum will enjoy that show. So house lights will be a little dimmer, but left on. So lights dimmed but on. A quiet room will be available and staffed with teachers. Loud noises are muted, and the light cues are designed so they won't startle. Audience members are free to come and go as needed without disturbing anyone. Tickets are free, but you need to register online at the Rochester City Ballet's website. That's rochestercityballet.com. And once again, that sensory-friendly ballet performance of Green Eggs and Ham at the Nazareth Art Center is on February 4th at 11 a.m. RochesterCityBallet.com, and hope you enjoy that. Had a really good conversation about what they do with the sensory-friendly productions last year. And they do really, really cool stuff. Before I get to the phone, which is ringing again, let me just ask Katie McGowan, who's an autism coordinator at CP Rochester and Happiness House, for people who haven't connected through CP Rochester and Happiness House, what is it that you guys do?
Absolutely. We provide a variety of services. I tend to be the first contact point through Happiness House. And once I've been contacted, I can kind of help direct you through the services we provide. There's a variety. We have a preschool program that provides services to individuals with autism, but also individuals with other disabilities and your typical individual. We have respite. We have community hab. There are housing opportunities. We also offer summer rec at CP Rochester. There are just a number of services, and they're always growing and changing to try to meet the needs of our population.
And I wanted to ask Betsy King as well, who's a professor of music therapy at Nazareth College, to tell us a little bit more about what you'd want parents to know, particularly people who may end up with a diagnosis in their life and wondering, you know, are there certain therapies, certain ideas that may be a good avenue to connecting, to establishing breakthroughs? I mean, every person with autism is different. What would you say to that?
Well, I think the most important thing is to listen to and watch your family member, your child. A lot of people think if some music is good, more music is better. That's not necessarily so. Some people think, my child puts his hands over his ears every time music comes on. I can remember a young man I did an assessment with in Seattle. I flew all the way to Seattle to do the assessment. And when I got there, his teacher said, well, I don't know what you're doing here because he puts his hands over his ears every time the music starts. I thought, uh-oh, I wasted a plane trip. I knew I probably hadn't. And all he needed was for the music to start very quietly, very gently. By the end of a half an hour, we were playing all the loud instruments and having a wonderful time. He just needed to ease into it. So I think watching your child and listening to, you know, listening with your eyes and your ears is the best advice I can give. And as I said, there's a range. Sometimes just the music around you and the music that's available in your house of worship or in your school is absolutely what's needed. Sometimes reaching out to a community program that has adaptive music can be the next best thing. And then we work with a lot of children for whom there's a coexisting condition, like an intellectual impairment or a physical impairment in addition to autism. And those are children who really need a unique plan developed just for them that we track and document.
Is there any genre of music, a single instrument that kind of breaks through more? No?
Can I please say that the Mozart effect was just a bunch of bunk? And
please do. Tell me more.
No, and that the original researchers on whom that book was based would also tell you that the book did not reflect their research. No, everyone likes something different. And some people will respond to a good reggae beat. Me, I'm going to be 90 and they better be playing funk in my nursing home. I'm a classical violinist, and if anybody plays the Paco Bell Canon for me, I get violent. So it's really important to recognize that music is an individual experience. Now, once you start sharing it together, find a common beat, absolutely creates relationships between people. But as far as deciding that there's one piece of music that you can, if anybody's trying to sell you a CD that says this was developed with whole tones or with certain frequencies, the research isn't there. Do what's right for your family member.
Well, what's the elevator pitch definition of what the Mozart effect is for people who haven't
heard? Well, the elevator pitch was that supposedly there had been research done that showed that when children were exposed to listening to Mozart, that they, basically the shorthand was their IQ got better. And what there had been some research to show was that certain musical experiences, especially taking piano lessons, might help a child increase their score on the spatial relations portion of a standard IQ test, but not for every child. And some children listened to Mozart and then took their SATs and did better. But the original researchers never meant for their research to be extrapolated as it was in the popular culture. It doesn't hurt anybody, like the governor of Georgia gave a CD to every newborn child of Mozart. Well, it doesn't hurt them, but it wasn't going to be a miracle either.
That happened in Georgia? That
yeah,
really?
Yeah. For a while after the book came out, there was every child was born in Georgia got a CD of Mozart. That's very nice.
it's not an evidence-based
right.
treatment of it. Okay. Well, no, that's interesting. It's funny you bring up spatial relationships, piano. You know, I look at my son who's almost five, who probably 7-8 months ago wouldn't have done Legos on his own. They're just sort of too fine and the pieces too small. Mm-hmm. And now doesn't want help with anything. Wants to do everything on his own. And I'm looking at this going, is there a better toy ever invented than Legos? It's amazing. I mean, he actually enjoys the process of putting it together more than playing with it when it's finished. It's sort of this process question. And I wonder, are there any other sort of toys, games, things like that, that fire the brain in any different way that we know?
I'm going to let Katie go to that.
Yeah, is there anything, again, evidence-based? Yeah.
Right. So that's hard to speak to in terms of evidence because, again, as we've said, you know, the spectrum is so broad. But I think activities that you can incorporate as much as you can, you know, the movement, the music, all of it, those kind of things are great. I mean, I think of something we do in our preschool constantly, like musical chairs. There's motion, there's rules, there's direction, there's music. I mean, it just encompasses so many things. And as many opportunities as you can provide to expose kids, all kids, to those things, wonderful things come about from it. You know, one of the things as I watched the movie I thought about was, you know, they're talking about finding a passion. And I think that's all people. And so that exposure is very important. You know, exposing to music, some kids don't rise to that, but athletics will be the thing that they find interesting and that activates their brain. So, you know, it was great in that way that I was looking at it specific from the frame of autism, but also that's all children. You want that for all children.
And I think access is so important. You were sharing with me earlier that Jeremiah doesn't have a chance to play saxophone right now because it just took so long for him to set up relative to the other children. That's not a good enough reason not to be playing saxophone. You know, that's finding a way to, you know, you don't need a therapist for that. You just need accommodations. And getting people to the place where they can be in a dance class or where they have the time and a person who's sensitive to the sensory issues to do the art. A lot of it is just access.
Well, and I want to ask Lisa and Jeremiah about what they see in terms of art in Jeremiah's life in the sort of as part of his future in just a second. But before I forget, you know, you mentioned that the one thing about music that seems to really have a helpful frame is it is the same. It is, once you know a song, that song doesn't change. That predictability can be very welcome in the life of someone with autism.
And predictability and routine is key in any individual with autism. They thrive on predictability and routine. So, and that's why music is, I think, so comforting to them because they know what to expect. So, and it also, like, he would go to the music and art program on Saturday and, you know, there would be a bunch of kids and they'd kind of be all doing the same thing. But then when they started a song, they would kind of all unify and follow the directions or what the therapist wanted them to do, like clap their hands or stomp their feet. You know, they would kind of all unify. So it would kind of bring them together. So that was cool. But yeah.
Well, and it's interesting because there are many models and approaches to music therapy, some of which are much more improvisational. And so you would think, well, that's not the same each time, but there is consistency in, for example, the modes the therapist chooses to use or the tempo or the instruments they're using. And some children respond much better to a session of music therapy that starts a certain way and has certain songs and ends a certain way. Others respond really well to an open creative environment. Again, it's individual. You've got to check with each individual for what they need.
That's why I was wondering if you think, Betsy, and again, I might just be reading in too much, but simpler music that's not classical music, that's not Mozart, might be, you know, three chord patterns, that kind of thing. Is that potentially better just because it's a little simpler and easier to recognize?
Well, you'd have a debate on that score too.
Okay.
And again, difficult to get evidence-based because our population of people is so different. And I will simply say I've been doing this 30 years, and I've seen children respond to everything.
Okay.
I use a lot of jazz chords in the work that I do. And My own research as a PhD student was about how the brain responds to close harmonies, major seconds, minor seconds, and how the brain responds in attention and alertness. And so I use a lot of those dissonances because it causes the person to become alert to something getting ready to happen. And it gives them that idea. Ooh, there's tension. I need to pay attention to what's happening next. And maybe what's happening next is the word you're trying to learn, or the phone number you're trying to memorize, or the greeting you're trying to learn how to do.
GDC doesn't have a lot of tension. That's true.
Yeah. Okay. And well, and we've heard it over and over again. Yeah. On the other hand, there's going to be somebody who needs that, or maybe just needs G.
Oh, yeah. Well, sorry, go ahead, Lisa.
Oh, Betsy, I was going to say maybe if you could elaborate on this too, but like when the kids are younger, a lot of times in autism, the left and the right brain don't work together, and there are songs that they could do with exercises that help them work on that.
I thought the film showed some great examples of that. And it is true. People used to say, oh, that, you know, creativity was a right brain thing and logic was a left brain thing. But music uses both sides of the brain and they have to work together. So I think that's part. And then I think when you add them, I was really compelled by seeing in the film when you added the movement to it, that for some of the children that was really an important sense of them becoming balanced, and this was an important concept in the film, self-regulating, that they themselves could use the dance or the music or the art to self-regulate instead of having somebody else having to comfort them or help them along.
And actually, before Jeremiah got the autism diagnosis, I had taken him to Rochester Hearing and Speech for some testing. And it was higher thinking testing. And I remember them saying about different exercises that I could do to get him to use both sides of the brain to work together. So that's what made me think of it.
Mm. Well, this is the same reason we use music in stroke recovery and traumatic brain injury recovery, because it is there are so many parts of the brain that, quote unquote, light up.
My son was asking me the other day, how do brains remember songs? I said, I am not qualified to answer that question.
That's an entirely different show.
It really is. It's amazing, though. It's amazing how many songs are embedded in there and how many. You're pointing to a book there, Betsy.
I'm going to give Evan a copy of my book on music therapy so that he can read it. He seems excited.
You're
about
on.
It.
Absolutely, yes. Jeremiah, can I ask you, do you have a favorite single song? Do you have a favorite song, or do you have a favorite band or music to listen to?
I just like hip-hop and rap.
Hip-hop and rap, yeah. See? So that's what fires him up. So, awesome. Well, before we have to let you guys go, I wanted to ask Lisa and Jeremiah, and I'll ask you first here. We've talked about the fact that he had this moment where he said, well, I didn't realize kids could write books. And he took on this project, and he did it. And he illustrated it. And again, the book is my super life with autism. And I'm curious to know what you think art's relationship in his life will be going forward. I mean, it's hard to know exactly, but what do you think the impact will be, and what do you expect to see when it comes to his life and art?
I would like to see him write another book. Maybe, you know, I think that a lot of people have said the input that has come back from him writing a book is that it's so nice, because a lot of times when you read about autism, you're reading about it from a professor or a study. You're not reading it from a person firsthand giving you their firsthand experiences. So, you know, I think as he gets older, maybe hopefully another book. And, you know, I'm encouraging him to participate in, like, you know, the drama club and stuff like that. There's actually a school that's near us. They're having auditions for a play coming up, so I'm going to have him do that. But he's really got quite the personality, and his humor and his sense of humor and stuff can really make a whole room full of people smile. So I would really like him to pursue the arts, you know, anything in the arts. And he, like I said, he's got a lot of he has a lot of good going for him in this area as far as music, art, and dance, and he's got great rhythm, so he's very talented.
Jeremiah, as you get older, do you expect to continue to keep I was going to say drawing, but illustrating? You illustrated with your book is illustrated with you kind of called it clay or
clay.
Yeah. So do you want to keep doing stuff like this? What do you want to do when it comes to art?
I just, I like to do art when I'm all crazy and stuff. It puts me in peace. Mainly, I just like to do it for fun.
That's great. That's great. I want to thank you for being here this hour, Jeremiah. It's really been great meeting you, and I'm really, really admired the work that you did with this book. I think it's going to help a lot of people. It's a beautiful story and well told, and it's really wonderful illustration. So thank you. It's been great meeting you. Thank you, Jeremiah.
You're welcome.
Jeremiah Ihoma. And Ihoma, again, it's ihomabooks.com if you want to check out My Super Life with Autism. Ihoma is spelled I-H-E-O-M-A. ehomabooks.com. So good luck to him. And go ahead, Lisa.
He has a Facebook page, too. It's called Ehoma Books.
It's great. So easy to find.
Yep.
Online and on Facebook. Good luck to both of you. Thank you.
Thank you.
And really appreciate it and admire your story here. And before we go here, Katie McGowan, people want to get in touch with CP Rochester or Happiness House in the future to find you and the work that you and your colleagues do. What do they do?
Absolutely. You can call me at 315-789-6828. Again, that number is 315-789-6828.
And Betsy King, we'll find you at Nazareth, right?
I mean, you will.
No shortage of work
there.
The
Wellness and Rehabilitation Institute and our music therapy clinic are on the web at the NAS website.
Thanks for being here as well. And listeners, one more time, I'm going to tell you, Thursday night, 10 p.m., that's the 26th, Thursday night, it's Generation A, Portraits of Autism and the Arts, and we certainly hope that you can tune in or DVR that program because I think you're going to find it really valuable. Been a wonderful afternoon. Our thanks to Rob Braden, the engineer, and Megan Mack as the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you Tuesday on Member Supported Public Radio.